Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners. My name is John Scapini, and I'm with the United States Sentencing Commission. You're listening to a special mini-series on guideline amendments effective on November 1st, 2024, and appear in the 2024 Guidelines Manual. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Ross Thomas cover the amendment relating to acquitted conduct. Other episodes in the series include an overview of the amendment process, loss calculations, circuit conflicts, youthful individuals, and miscellaneous and technical changes. You can listen to all of the episodes in this series on iTunes and Spotify or on our website. Without further ado, Lori and Ross.
We're talking about the amendments that are taking effect on November 1st of 2024. And the first one that we're going to talk about is acquitted conduct. Ross, can you give us a little bit of background on what this topic is? What is acquitted conduct? Why are we looking at it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if you are unfamiliar with the federal sentencing process, you would think if you go to trial and the jury acquits you, they find you not guilty, how can that be used against you to sentence you? But that's how it's been for a really long time. There is no limit on what a judge can consider at sentencing. And because of that, judges have used acquitted conduct if there's some other conviction as a basis for sentencing.
That's kind of hard to understand, especially if you're, you know, really not ingrained in this topic. How can somebody be found not guilty at trial, but still be sentenced on that behavior? How can that happen?
So that really happens because we have two different standards of proof. One is beyond a reasonable doubt. So in order to convict someone of a crime, a jury has to find all the elements of an offense beyond a reasonable doubt. But once someone's convicted of anything, we get to sentencing, and the judge's standard of proof is more likely than not, a preponderance of the evidence. That is a lower standard of proof, and it was not logically inconsistent to say a jury did not find this thing beyond a reasonable doubt, but a judge applying a lower burden of proof still found that information and used that information to sentence you.
So that makes sense technically, but probably doesn't make a lot of sense to the general public or to somebody that's being sentenced.
No, and I think that was a big motivation behind this acquitted conduct amendment. We've heard from very important judges, even justices on the Supreme Court. We heard from academics and other practitioners and people who have been sentenced that this feels really unfair, that there is a sense that we have a right to a trial by jury. And if you're acquitted, this still being held against you feels unfair. And I think that's what really motivated the commission to start looking at this and to see, okay, well, what can we do from a sentencing commission's perspective to maybe narrow the focus of or the use of acquitted conduct.
Right, and the commission looked at this over a period of time, over a couple of amendment cycles. So can you tell us, you know, what's on the horizon now? What do we expect to be changing in terms of acquitted conduct?
Yeah, so what the commission has changed, it's its rules governing relevant conduct. So relevant conduct is just a fancy legal term of art for sort of the rules governing which facts you can use when you're calculating out the offense levels, the sort of Chapter 2 and Chapter 3 guidelines. And what they did is carve out an exception to relevant conduct that says you cannot use acquitted conduct for the purposes of determining relevant conduct. Now, that has a limitation. That limitation is federal acquittals only. So state acquittals, tribal acquittals can still come in as relevant conduct, but any federal acquittals will not be used for the purposes of determining someone's offense levels when we're calculating out those guidelines in Chapters 2 and Chapters 3.
Can you give us a kind of straightforward example of what you mean by that? Say somebody goes to trial on two counts, is convicted of one and acquitted of another. So can you explain to us how that will not be able to come in as relevant conduct.
Absolutely. So this is one that I used with my clients all the time. Imagine that you have someone who is charged with a murder, right, in relation to a racketeering enterprise, right? Someone that's drug trafficking and there was also a murder. If that person goes to trial on both counts, they're acquitted of the murder but convicted of the drug trafficking. Before this amendment went into effect, their sentencing guidelines would be calculated on the basis of that murder, not on the basis of that drug trafficking. After this amendment takes effect, you would no longer be able to cross-reference and use those murder guidelines to sentence someone. You would be looking at their drug trafficking conduct. That's what would be the basis of their guidelines range. Now, the important thing to remember is this is only about the calculation of the guidelines. The judge, in his or her discretion, is able to consider this information under 18 U.S.C. 3661.
Which says what?
It says that no limitation shall be placed on what you can consider or what a judge can consider at the time of sentencing.
So basically, the acquitted conduct cannot be used to anchor the guidelines any longer, but is still something that the court can take into account in fashioning the appropriate sentence.
That is a perfect way to describe it and probably better than I could come up with.
So you gave a good example of acquitted conduct not being able to be used to calculate the guidelines, but that's a really clear example, right? Charged with a murder, acquitted of a murder, can't use the murder to calculate the guidelines. But it's not always that clear. What about somebody that has like a drug conspiracy and the underlying drug offense and is found guilty of one and acquitted of the other? That gets a little bit messy, right?
Yeah, there are going to be a lot of situations, or a lot is an exaggeration, but there are definitely going to be some situations that it's not entirely clear what the federal acquittal is and what the federal conviction is. There's going to be a lot of overlapping conduct. And I think this is something that the commission struggled with articulating over the last two amendment cycles, because we do have these murky scenarios. And the one that you brought up is a great one. It's one that several commenters during this public comment period raised, and that's if someone is convicted of a substantive drug offense, like several counts, but acquitted of the overall conspiracy, how do we parse out what is due to the conspiracy and what is due to these substantive counts? And what the commission did is not try and come up with a resolution to every single murky case. It actually left to the discretion of the federal judge, who hopefully sat through that trial and will be able to better parse through, okay, this is what the jury was finding and this is what the jury didn't find, and separate that out for him or herself in imposing the sentence.
Okay, that makes sense. So to sum up acquitted conduct, basically in the words of Chair Reeves, not guilty means not guilty, right? So that acquitted conduct cannot be used any longer in the guideline calculations. There may be some situations where it's hard to figure out that overlapping conduct, and the court's going to be in the best position to make that decision. And then finally, the court can take everything into account in fashioning the sentence. Did I sum that up correctly?
As always, you sum it up much better than I ever could.
All right, so that's acquitted conduct.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. You can listen to each part of this mini-series on iTunes and Spotify, as well as our website. Please be advised that the information provided by Commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the Commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the Commission, court, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.